And now on BBC Radio 4, our book at bedtime is The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett. Carol and Jude have established that a missing body was hidden for a while in Rory Turnbull's boat at Feathering Yacht Club. But now Turnbull himself has gone missing, leaving behind some seriously tangled finances, dark rumours of a drugs habit, and a suicide note.
The body was put in Rory Turnbull's boat, said Carol, as they reached the gate of Woodside Cottage. That's the only thing we've got linking Aaron Spalding's death and Turnbull's suicide. Maybe it's just an unfortunate coincidence.
It's not much, admitted Jude.
Well, said Carol, I think we need to know more about Rory Turnbull. What pushed him over the edge? And whether he did have anything to do with drugs, said Jude. You noticed that too, when Ted hinted at something and then clammed up.
Yes. I'll follow up on that tomorrow.
How? Let's say I have an idea of where to start. And I, announced Carol, will make it my business to find out more about Rory Turnbull. How will you do that? Let's say I have an idea of where to start, came the lofty reply. Carol Seddon could also play mysterious when she needed to. Spray Lodge was the nearest residential building to the river. Its most valued flats looked out over the yacht club and the sea wall, from the repair works on which Carol could hear the monotonous thud of the pile driver. When she buzzed through on the entry phone, Winnie Norton's carefully enunciated tones inquired,
Yes, who is it?
It's Carol Seddon. I've got the Canine Trust raffle tickets.
Oh, splendid! Do come up!
And the entry phone box buzzed admission. When she opened the door of the flat, Winnie Norton was revealed in a cherry-coloured woollen suit with gold braiding and buttons. Her hair was fixed like stiff meringue on the top of her head. With her spare hand, she held the yapping Churchill to her chest.
"Look who's come to see you," she cooed. "It's your friend Carol. Now, dear, you do have time for a coffee, don't you?"
As Winnie Norton brought in the coffee tray, Carol reflected that her hostess wasn't acting like someone whose son-in-law had just committed suicide. Maybe she didn't yet know.
"I heard a terrible rumour about Rory Turnbull in the supermarket this morning," she ventured. "I do hope it's not true." "It's true, all right, and absolutely typical of the man, selfish to the end."
"They've found the body?"
"No, not yet. That man's never thought of anyone but himself. Not our class of person at all. I could see that from the day I first met him. What's more, everyone in Feathering will assume that there was something wrong with their marriage."
"And wasn't there?" asked Carol.
"The only thing Barbara did wrong was choosing an unsuitable man in the first place. She's behaved like a saint throughout, in spite of all the dreadful things Rory did."
"What kind of things? Was he unfaithful to Barbara?"
"Good heavens, no. No, it was more mental cruelty, I suppose you'd call it. He collected pornography, you know."
"Did he?"
"Poor Barbara found boxes of the stuff when she was looking through their loft. Rory was up to all kinds of other things as well. He came back in the small hours only a couple of months ago, and he'd had a tooth knocked out. And then there was the drinking."
"Had he always drunk?" asked Carol. Getting the information she was after was going to be remarkably easy.
"He'd always had it in him," said Winnie Norton. "But it was only in the last few months it had got out of hand. And it wasn't just drink."
The old lady leaned forward.
"I think he was spending all their money on drugs. Barbara had suspected, and I found some stuff in Rory's study. In his desk drawer there was a syringe and some metal foil and a little packet of white powder.
I'm distressed to hear that, Winnie, Carol said blandly. Do give my condolences to Barbara, won't you?
Condolences? She needs congratulations. 28 years of misery, and now, finally, she's shot of him.
Yes, said Carol. Of course. Now, about these raffle tickets.
Jude, meanwhile, had decided she'd have to call on her acting skills to further her own research. She rang through to J.T. Carpets, announced herself as Mrs. Grant Edwards, and putting on a voice of excruciating gentility, said she would like to contact one of their carpet fitters, a young man named Dillon.
You see, he was working in our house, and he appears to have left his wallet behind, so I just wanted to ring him and put his mind at rest.
The girl gave Jude his home number. She was in luck. He was at home. Is that Dillon?
Yeah. Who wants him?
I was given your name. I want some gear.
What kind of gear?
Pot. Dillon laughed harshly.
What makes you think I might be able to help you?
Jude took the risk and backed her hunch. Rory Turnbull, she said. The silence lasted so long she feared she'd miscalculated. Then Dillon repeated,
Rory Turnbull, eh? Our fine upstanding dentist.
Yes, he said he was a customer of yours.
At one time. I don't carry the stuff he was after.
He wanted hard drugs.
Yeah, smack. I gave him the name of a contact in Brighton and didn't hear from him again. So I guess that's where he took his business.
Who was that contact? Jude realised she'd been over-eager, even before Dillon responded.
Hey, just a minute. I thought you said it was weed. Or was it pot you were after?
Yes, she agreed contritely. Can you help me? That afternoon, over a cup of tea at Carol's, the two women pooled what they'd gleaned. They'd found reasons why Rory Turnbull might have wanted to take his own life, but they'd found nothing that linked him with the body Carol had found on Feathering Beach. Jude screwed up her eyes. Is there something obvious we're missing? There was a long silence. Then Carol said,
Teresa Spaulding, there's something I should have asked her and didn't. Why did she come here? How did she know I'd found the body? She wasn't there, so she must have talked to someone who saw me. But who?
They drove straight up to Downside in the Renault. A bunch of kids were loitering in Drake Crescent outside Teresa Spaulding's front door. They watched in silence as Carol repeatedly rang the bell. Only when she banged on the door did one of the kids shout out,
She's not here, they've taken her away.
Who's taken her away?
They all seemed keen to pitch in with information.
An ambulance come. They took her where the crazy people go. She totally lost it. She's in the nut house. The loony bean.
Carol and Jude exchanged rueful looks. They went back to the car and drove off to a burst of derisive laughter. The Saturday evening and the Sunday compounded their frustration. Both kept contemplating calling round next door to discuss their investigation further, but both knew there was nothing else to say. So Carol watched Saturday evening television, and on Sunday took Gulliver out for longer walks than usual. Next door, Jude unpacked some books and stacked them upright in old wine crates in her bedroom. She did her yoga. She too realised nothing could happen until Rory Turnbull's suicide was confirmed to have taken place. At the Brighton Dental Surgery on Monday morning, Jude was directed to a different waiting room for her appointment with the hygienist. The plate on the door read Holly Draper.
The door opened, and the previous patient was ushered out by a short, unnatural blonde with large, honey-coloured eyes, wearing a white overall and latex gloves. She turned to Jude and smiled.
"Well, hello. You must be..." "Everyone calls me Jude." "I'm Holly. Jude, as in Judith, is that right? If you'd like just to come through to my little room, lovely. And make yourself comfortable in the chair, would you? I'll just glance at your notes. Oh, Mr. Frobisher says we've a bit of inflammation round our gums. Oh, dear, oh, dear, aren't we a naughty girl? Right, well, I'd better have a look, hadn't I?"
Turning to pick up her instruments, she left a fractional pause into which Jude managed to insert, "Dreadful news about Rory Turnbull, wasn't it?"
"Oh, yes, everyone here is gobsmacked. Now, if you just open for me and pop this in. Do you floss at all? I'm just going to go round and pick up a bit of the muck between your teeth. No, I mean, Rory wasn't a particularly happy man, but I'd never have thought he was the kind to do away with himself. Mind you, after what came out last week, it was perhaps a little less surprising. When the regional dental officer came to inspect, it was clear something was seriously wrong, and... Could you shift your chin down a bit, please? I mean, getting on for £10,000 of dental work he claimed for, but never carried out. Right, now we'll just give them a nice clean-up, shall we?"
She turned to an articulated drill-like machine and fitted a small circular brush into its socket. This she dipped into a tub of paste. These actions did not for a moment interrupt her monologue.
"Not that Rory was a bad man. He did some charity work, I believe, and he could be generous. There was this girl he quite often used to give a lift back to Feathering after work."
"Who was that?" Jude squeezed in the question.
"I don't know. Girl of about 20, I suppose. Short hair, sort of hennaed. I think she worked evenings in Feathering, which is why he sometimes gave her a lift."
"Well, she'll have to find someone else to do it for her now, won't she?"
"There, all nice and clean, lovely. Look in the mirror. Doesn't that look better? But now I'm going to be a real bully and give you a big lecture about flossing. Are you feeling strong enough?"
Carol's frustration mounted through the Monday morning. Still, there was one approach which might lead to further information. She looked up a number in the local directory and rang it.
"Winnie, it's Carol Seddon. I just rang to say thank you so much for the coffee on Saturday morning." "Oh, it was a pleasure to see you."
In the background, something yapped.
"And I just wondered, is there any sign of an end to poor Barbara's ordeal?" "Barbara's ordeal gets worse by the minute. She's just discovered that so-called husband of hers had remortgaged the house without telling her. There's nothing in any of their savings accounts. And then to commit suicide so that she doesn't even get any of the insurance. Oh, how awful, Winnie. But when you talk about suicide, I mean, that is definite now, is it? They've found his body." "Not yet, but it's only a matter of time. Thank goodness my poor baby's got my money to fall back on." "Well, look," said Carol, "I hope you get some good news soon." "The only good news I can get is the confirmation that the man is dead," said Winnie Norton.
And Joanna Tope reads episode 8 of The Body on the Beach by Simon Brett tomorrow evening. The producer in Edinburgh is David Jackson Young.